Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, yes, welcome back, everybody, once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 41 for April the 8th, 2014. I'm your host, Jack, and I'm going to help guide you through the magical networking cables and the servers and everything else out there that we got to worry about on a daily basis. If you get a moment, please check out my website at tipsfromtheserverroom.com where you can comment on these shows. You can also leave me a voice message. That number is 724-701-0550. If you have any questions for some future shows or some ideas or something that you're worried about in your server room or in your networks, you can send me an email. That is jackstechcorner@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, and that is at Technoman. Hey, do you want to learn more about Windows Server 2008 R2? Or Windows Server 2012 R2? If you do, then please sign up for one of my online courses at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Click on the online link at the top of the page, and you can begin when you want, and you never have to worry about the course ending. It's always available for you. Folks, I do want to introduce a brand new podcast I'm working on starting tomorrow night. It will be live at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If everything goes my way, we are broadcasting it out to you on Spreaker, and that is called The Tech Podcast. You can find it at thetechpodcast.com. There's also a subscribe button on there where you can subscribe, and you will be subscribing through iTunes. Once again, that's The Tech Podcast.com. It's going to kind of coexist with this one. This one is more of the techie-oriented type of a podcast. And the Tech Podcast is going to be talking about all things tech all the time. And we'll talk about many, many different facets of technology. So if you're into that, maybe you want to subscribe to that show. So how's your server room doing this week? And how's your computers doing in your offices? You know, today is the official day that Windows XP is dying with Microsoft. We knew it was going to happen. They put it out there a long time ago, and we've talked about it in this show, and I've talked about it in many other different facets of the technology world. Were you ready? Did you get all your systems updated and ready to go? You know, we still have a lot of systems in our network that needs upgraded that are still Windows XP, and we just found out the other day that we just don't have the budget to do it right now. So what happens if you don't have the budget to do it? Can you disconnect those computers from the internet? Can you say, look, we are no longer going to have internet access with those particular computers? Are we going to just let them fade away and die? So do you upgrade those computers or do you buy new ones? That's kind of where we're at, the crossroad we're at. But we have a lot of brand new systems we purchased just last year, actually. Last year, I believe. And they came in blank, and for some reason, we loaded Windows XP on them because we didn't have the Windows 7 licenses, but we did have the Windows XP licenses, so we loaded XP on them. And the only thing I can tell you to do right now with those systems is try to keep them as secure as possible. The first thing you want to do is make sure nobody has local admin privileges on those computers. And if they do, you're going to have to revoke that. Just for your sanity and for their safety of the user, you might want to revoke that and just give them standard user privileges. That way nothing will get installed on there or come in the kind of the back door that you didn't know was going to happen. Also, folks, I was reading up a lot today, and I found that today is also the day that Windows 8.1 and Windows Server 2012 R2 is set to receive their new updates. And if you haven't heard about this, the actual Windows Start button is going to be coming back onto those computers. That's a bonus, because let's face it, folks, I know if your network is anything like mine and your users are anything like mine, if we give them the Windows 8.1 Metro interface, we are going to be dealing with some disasters, and that's exactly what's going to happen, disasters. You're going to spend a lot of time, unless you got time to train all your people, and we just don't have that opportunity. We don't have that time. In a school-type setting, we are so fast-paced, and our teachers are so overwhelmed already this time of year with getting their finals ready for the kids. And there's just no time to really train people on the new Windows 8.1 interface. So if they truly bring back the start button, which you know you can do that now. I've talked about that in the past where you can add the start button to your computers. You can go to 9night.com. And you can actually download a free start menu from there, and it works really, really well. It brings all the usable features back that we had in the past, so it's something you can do. But a lot of people choose just to wait. Why not wait? And if you're running Windows 7 computers, then you're fine. Just keep running your Windows 7 computers until they go out of date, which, if it's anything like Windows XP, it's going to be quite a while anyway, so just keep running your Windows 7 boxes. We just purchased some brand new Windows 8.1 upgrade licenses, but we were able to buy the Windows 7 media with it. So we are going to be loading Windows 7 Professional on our computers at work and not go to Windows 8. I tried earlier today. I got onto my Windows 8.1 box and I tried to upgrade it, but I didn't see the upgrade to the newest 8.2. Or 8.1.1, whatever they may be calling it. I don't know. But the only thing I've seen, there was some security updates and, you know, some critical updates that you have to run on the box. So it's something I guess we got to wait. But I also read today that Windows Server 2012 is going to be getting its start button back also. Now, I'm not telling you to upgrade your servers to Windows Server 2012. I know I'm not ready for that. So I'm going to be sticking right now with Windows Server 2008. I believe in it. It's solid. It works well. And it's just a good operating system. Now, as I said in the opening there, I do teach Windows Server 2012 R2 on my online course. So I've been around it. I've been around the block a few times with it. I'm just not ready to upgrade my servers yet. I don't see the big need for it. And if there's not a need to do it, then it's not something that you're going to be pressing to do. Maybe if you're going to put a new server in your rack, you may want to go ahead and load Windows Server 2012 on it. Because remember now, folks, Windows Server 2003, that support is dying with XP. So if you have 2003 servers running in your rack, now is the time to get those servers switched out and upgraded, do some migrations over to Windows Server, at least 2008 R2. You'll be happy that you did. And there's a lot of great features with Server 2008, and it helps you to control the policies and everything with the Windows 7 boxes. So it's a better marriage than what you're trying to do right now. So if you use policies, that's what you want to do. You can lock down the features a lot better, and it just simply works. So enough about that. I'm sure you've been beat up and your ears been beat up about that. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more tomorrow on the tech podcast about Windows 8.1. As tomorrow, I'll try to upgrade a box again and see if I can't find that upgrade. I thought I found it kind of under the radar, but I was wrong, and it was just a bunch of crapware that was trying to load on the computer. So I suggest that you wait, that don't try to download it from some unreliable resource, because you may get something you're not expecting to get. So just hang in there and wait for it to come out. In today's show, I thought we would talk a little bit about building and using trust relationships between different domains. I've been emailing and working with one of my students from the online courses, and he has been having a terrible time trying to set up a test network. What he's trying to do is set up a test domain controller, and with that domain controller, he's also trying to use a work group. And we're trying to find a workaround where he can do that so he can test out the new domain, but still keep his home work group running and keep it functioning. And that's kind of where he's at. So that kind of led me into tonight's class. And I thought, well, we'll talk about using trust relationships between domains. So why would you want to build a relationship between two domains? We used to have two different domains in our network. We used to have what was known as the student's domain, and we had the teacher's domain or administration domain. The reason we had those, obviously, was for security reasons, to keep the students off of the domain controllers for the teachers And we had a couple problems. Here's the first one. When our teachers were assigning different assignments to the children, they wanted to be able to get into their folders and see the work that they were performing and saving. So to do that, we had to dig down and look for a solution. The solution I found was to build a trust relationship. So I wanted to trust my student's domain to the teacher's domain. And the reason I want to do that is you can perform a one-way trust so the teachers can see the students, but the students could not still see the teachers. Or you could build a bi-directional two-way trust. And that is where the student's domain trust and the teacher's domain trust will trust each other back and forth. We choose to do the bi-directional or two-way trust. And the reason we did that is we had some areas such as libraries or whatever, and you may have this in your business, where the teachers may want to go to and sit down at a student's computer and log in. Well, if you have a one-way trust, the domain for the teachers didn't show up on that particular computer. The student's domain showed up on the teacher's computer with a one-way trust, but on a two-way trust, now our teachers can log in either way, and that is what we were trying to accomplish, and we did that by building a trust relationship. So the main thing is if you want to allow resources from one domain to be seen by another, that's a great reason to set up a domain trust. It also allows you to share your Active Directory database users between the two domains. So if I set up a user account on domain A, then I can also use that domain or use that user account on domain B and vice versa. So it's a great way you can put a user in one domain and be pretty confident they're going to have access to both domains. Now we're going to go through, we're going to get really, really techy here really, really fast. So kind of bear with me. I know this is an audio podcast, and I know a lot of you guys and girls out there listen to me on the way to work in the car in the morning, as I've done with a lot of podcasting myself. So we're going to get techy here, but I'm going to try to describe this, and we're going to walk through this thing as slowly as possible without running over my allotted 45-minute Spreaker time, because this is being broadcasted live on Spreaker. And if you're out there listening, thank you very much for joining me this evening. And don't forget, you can chat in the little chat window. You can get in there and send me a message as I'm broadcasting, and I will see that. If you have a question, maybe we can clarify that along the way. Now, domains by default are unable to communicate with other domains, which means somewhere in domain A, you cannot access resources that are part of domain B before a trust relationship is configured. So we want to trust one domain to the other. An administrator of A cannot give permissions to any user of domain B for items such as files or printers. A user of domain B cannot sit at a workstation and be part of domain A and log in. Now, after a trust relationship is defined, say A, trust B, the following happens. Users of domain A can sit at a workstation that is part of domain B and log in to their own domain A. That's pretty complicated. But it's just what I said in the opening and a little bit earlier was, if you sit at any computer, you can log in to your domain because the little pull-down menu says which domain do you wish to use. You can select your own domain and log in because it's going to be displayed in the domain drop-down box. Now, an administrator of domain B can grant permissions to users of domain A to use file and print resources. Users of domain B are included in the everyone group of domain A. So again, now, if I was going to share a file folder on my secondary B domain, and I wanted to give those teachers access to the students' folders, they are now part of the everyone group. We went one step further. We made a group called teachers on the other domain, added our teachers from the A group, and we gave them permissions to read the file folders of the B domain. So in the example, in trusting domain and A and B are in the trusted domain. Also, the above, remember about a one-way trust relationship, while domain Y users of domain resources, users can also have a two-way relationship, which will allow each domain to access resources on the other if given permission. Now, folks, with all this complicated talk, all this hogwash talk that we're going through right now, it's very, very confusing. So here's what we did. In the next year after I was hired at the school, what I decided to do was called flattening my domain or flattening the network. I built one master domain controller. And on that domain controller, I now house everybody. I house my teachers, my administrators, my students. Just like if you're working for a company, you might be housing your administration, your financial department, and maybe something like your drafting labs. The reason we did that is it's a lot, there's a lot less area for breakage because things can happen with domain trust, and we're going to talk about that here in a little while, where you can fall into that issue where you have a problem and the domain will become untrusted. Now, all that great sharing of resources is gone until you go and fix it. Now, I'm going to teach you how to build a basic trust relationship. And you're going to first configure domain A to allow domain B to trust it. And then you configure domain B to trust domain A. Now, I got all my side notes down here, and I can tell you one thing we have to remember about. I'm going to give you a little bit of a word of advice. Because that's why you listen to podcasts, right? To get some advice. The advice I'll give you is I found this a long time ago. What you need to do is go to both of the domain controllers, go into their DNS services, and in the DNS, add a secondary zone. That secondary zone will be the name of your other domain. So you have the primary zone will be the primary domain you're on. The secondary domain or the secondary zone will be the new domain or the other domain you're connecting to. And you want to put the same records, at least as far as the domain controllers go, the servers, those same records with this pointing to the same IP addresses in the DNS of each other. The reason we do that is you will not believe how fast and how much better this trust relationship is built. Sometimes, folks, I've sat and I've waited for 20 minutes for the server to talk to the other server. When I put these DNS records in, I have that down to about a minute. I type it in and I say I want to trust, b.domain.org to a.domain.org. Boom, it finds it, it trusts it, and we're good to go. With that said, there's one other way that you can do it. And we've also did it this way. If you add it to the local host records of that server, so you add the IP address and the domain of the other domain, and then they add the IP address and the domain of the secondary domain in their host files, and it's a direct connection. It'll see that and it'll fire off really, really quickly. You'll be really surprised. So if you've never done a domain before, I'm going to walk through this and I'm going to tell you how to do this. First, you log on to domain A as the administrator. You click on User Manager for Domains. And you click on Start Programs Administrative Tools. And then you're going to select Trust Relationships. In the Trust Relationships, you're going to click on Add to trust a new domain. Enter the name of the domain that you want to be able to trust you. All right, so this is domain A. We're sitting at domain A, we're logging onto that server, and you're typing in the domain name for domain B. You can type a password in the initial password and you confirm the password. However, this is used only when the trust relationship is started. Now you can leave it blank and click OK to complete the addition. Close the trust relationship dialog box. Now log off of domain A and go to your domain B server and log on as administrator. Let's do the same thing. Click on Start. Click on User Manager for Domains and choose Trust Relationships. And then click on the Add the Trust box. Now enter the name for the domain A. And enter the password as it was configured before. So put your passwords in there. And I would also recommend the top-level administrator password on both of these domains should be the same. It just simply, it seems to work better. You will click OK and close the User Manager for Domains application. Now, if everything went right, domain X now trusts domain Y, or domain A now trusts domain B. Now, how do we know if it worked? Here's what I do. Let's go to domain A. Go to your shared file folders. In your shared file folders, now if you right-click on it, go to Properties, and then go to Security, you will be able to go into Security and click on Add and see now if you can add one of your users from domain B. If it populates, then you did it right. You did it correctly. Everything's going to work out perfectly, and you can now see those users and be able to interact with those users and give them permissions on that server. Now I want you to go to domain controller B and do the same thing to make sure your two-way trust relationship is working. If they do, then you're golden. Everything's going to be perfect for you. Now you can start sharing the printers that you might have on one domain with the other domain, and everything will be perfect and working the way it should. Now, sometimes a trust relationship can fail. If they do, here's a few steps that you can use to correct your issues. First, if only one person is reporting login issues, and this happens, a lot of times with my interns. I'll get an intern in from a local college, and these young kids come into us, and they are so well-versed and so trained in the big issues that sometimes they forget to drill down and take it one step at a time and make it a smaller issue before you blow it up into a big issue. So if this one person can't log in, sometimes this tech will come back and say, hey, we want to reformat the server because somebody can't log in. Well, we have one person reporting the issue. What you need to do is go to that actual workstation and try to log in as you or with the administrator account. If you can log in with your credentials and you can hit the domain and get to the file folders and the shares, then the trust is working and everything's good. We obviously have a trouble with that one person's account. There's something wrong with their account that's not letting them to hit the resources of both domains. And that can happen. Now, if you can log into the workstation, then what you would do, what I would try to do anyway, if it seems like there's still a problem with this person after you reset their password and do all the common stuff that we do, I would unjoin the workstation from the domain and then rejoin it back to the domain. Here's something that a lot of my young techs don't understand. Once a computer is joined to your domain controller, there's two things that happen. One, if you're using DHCP, there is a DHCP record that gets put into your leases for that actual computer. So that is in there, and that computer should receive the same IP address. The second thing that happens is that computer is registered with its MAC address to your DNS server with the computer name. So you have the computer name and the gets in the DNS server with the IP address. Sometimes when you try to rejoin your workstation to your domain, what happens is, and a lot of people make this mistake, and it's sad to see, and I see these young kids come out of time, and I want to call the colleges and say, look, we have to rethink this. The reason it doesn't want to rejoin is because the domain controller thinks it's already joined because it's in the DNS records. It sees it and says, wait, you're already here. So what my young techs like to do is they like to rename the computer. And this drives me absolutely crazy because for inventory, and the inventory program that I wrote that pulls these computers down to it, then all of a sudden I have two records. It's like I'm adding another computer to my inventory, and I'm not. What you have to do is go to the DNS server on a particular domain you're joining and delete that actual record. Then you can rejoin it using the same computer name, and it will work fine. Don't add a dash one or an underscore one or dash five or a P or whatever. Just do that. The next thing you have to do, we had a lot of trouble with this with our Macs, with our OS X machines that we've been adding to our network, is we'll go to join those to the domain controller, and it won't join. And we scratched our head for a while trying to figure this out. Why won't it join? This little tidbit of information can save you so much time. It might be something you want to take a note on. You might want to put this in your Evernote and have this for you forever so you can maybe go back and check this. Sometimes it happens with the Windows computers. I had a girl one time. We live in the Eastern time zone. And for whatever reason, this intern I had, I don't know if that's where she was from or whatever, set all of our new workstations on Central Time because she thought we were in the Central Time Zone. And that kind of stuff happens. But then the computer didn't want to join a domain controller because the time of the workstation was wrong. If you're trying to join your domain controller, there's a setting in group policies that determines how far off a workstation's time can be before it will be allowed to connect. We had ours set to 1 hour difference. So if you're in Central Time Zone, I believe that was 2 hours difference from the Eastern. And what happens is it would not connect. And after scratching our head for several minutes, we found that that was the case. The time was off and it wouldn't connect. The same thing happened with our Macs. The Macs were off by, I don't know, At one time we had it, if it was off 15 minutes from one way or the other, it would not connect. So what we did was we set the time. So I went to the server though and I adjusted the time on the server to make it 2 hours one way or the other. Now we're pretty safe and everything seems to work just well. Now, if you have many people reporting login issues, so many people on your network is reporting it, you're starting to receive phone calls, and you're starting to look this stuff up. What happens there is you actually start to have issues with your domain controllers. Now, if you have issues with your domain controllers, and especially if you're having issues between people going from one domain to the other, I would suggest go back to your domain controllers, break your trust relationship, and then rebuild the trust relationship. Sometimes something happens in a file. I don't know where it's at, and I wish I could tell you exactly where to look. But you get these files, and something will get corrupted, and it just won't allow these users to talk back and forth between these domains. Again, a long time ago, that's why I got on mine, and we actually flattened the domains out and made one domain, and we just control everybody and everything with our group policies. And you have to, you know, then rely a lot on your Active Directory, rely a lot on your common sense about who you're allowing where, who you're allowing in what folders, and it's really not hard to manage. If you listen back a few podcasts ago, I don't know how far, we talked about documentation. You need to document your file folder structure. And the reason I say that is, if you ever get audited by anybody, they're going to want to know who has access to whose file folder. And at one time, we had an issue. This was several years ago now. But we had an issue where we had certain people being able to see everyone's file folders. And after digging around, we found that we had, under the read part of the file folder, we had everyone. Everyone means, if you remember earlier, I told you in this building a trust relationship, everyone means everyone of both domains. So you can't have everyone. When you're sharing file folders out to your individual users, the only people you should have it shared out to is one, you, the administrator, not even your personal account, and two, that actual user should have full access to that file folder. And if you need anybody else in there, you should make individual groups and know who are in those groups. Never, ever use everyone and never use domain user, because essentially everyone's a domain user because they're logging into your domain. So hopefully that makes some kind of straight up sense to you. All right, my last few thoughts about building trusts on your server, and we talked about this already, I think, a little bit, we covered it, but I'm just going to hit it again because it's so very important. The first one is, when you're building a trust relationship, it is very advisable to use the same version of server on both of your servers. You're going to run into a lot of problems if you try to join a 2003 server with 2008, or worse would be 2012. Just the way those two boxes communicate, it's very hard to build the trust relationship. If you do build a trust relationship and do get it working somehow, you're actually dumbing down your 2007 server, because you're bringing on the 2003 usability functions and you're losing that new functionality of the 2007. The same thing would happen if you have the 2008 server and you're joining it with the 2012. So if you're joining and building these trusts and you think that's what you want to do, then the best way I can tell you to do it is to use the same version of server. Let me tell you another instance of why we've built a trust in the past. We wanted to bring a new domain controller online. So instead of trying to migrate my old domain controller, I decided to start from scratch and build a brand new domain controller. I gave it a brand new name, and then I started connecting all my people to my new domain controller. But when you have 700 workstations, what happens with that 700 workstations is it's a bit of a struggle to get everybody moved over at any one given time. So I built a trust relationship between my old server and my new server. That way both of those logins were there, and I knew whenever somebody sat down, they can log into either one until we can get to their computer and put them on the new domain. That way it was just an easier way for me to migrate into a new domain. And folks, that is how I got rid of that two domain server structure that we had built before, and that's how we moved everybody to a new one single domain. Now, again, I said, if you're having trouble attaching or trusting a server, remember about the little DNS trick I told you. Set up new zones on both servers, and those zones will be those actual servers, the each other server, and set all the DNS records up in there that you would need for those. It's just a very direct way, and it's a direct shot for the name to look it up, and it goes right to that domain controller, and that trust is built, and it works perfectly. Next, as I said, there's a quicker way to do it just by putting those records in the host file, and it works extremely well to do that also. So, folks, I know this was a ton of information tonight. When I was actually writing the show notes for tonight, I'm thinking, wow, this is a lot of information for you. And there's a lot of information on the internet that you can look up and you can read for yourself. But what these podcasts are designed to do is kind of help you along the way and let you know you're not alone. When you're sitting in that server room, you're scratching your head thinking, I wish I knew how to do this. Chances are somebody else has already scratched their head and came up with a solution. So we just need to dig around a little bit and find that. But you can always ask me here. And if you send your emails again to jackstechcorner@gmail.com, I can put it on these shows and we can address everybody out there listening to these shows. And maybe somebody will come up with a solution or have a solution already for you in their bag of tricks. That's how we want these to pay it forward, to pay it to each other. Folks, I want to thank everybody out there who's been signing up for my Windows Server courses, and I'm glad that you have been also. We've had a lot of positive feedback. A lot of people out there are taking these courses, and they're doing great things with them. They're learning by watching videos and taking a brief quiz. That's all you got to do. And once you do that and you complete it, then you actually earn a certificate, which you can use to get that new job you're looking for, or maybe get an advancement at where you're working now. Also, remember, if you don't have high-speed internet, and I know people email me and said, Jack, if people don't have a high-speed internet, they're probably not listening to their podcast. This is not the truth. The truth is, a lot of people, like when I didn't have high-speed internet because I live in kind of a rural area, I would download my podcast at work and listen to them in the evenings when I got home. So if you don't have high-speed internet, I do have the server videos all on DVD, and you can buy those at jackstechcorner.com. There's a little pull-down menu on the right. Click that pull-down menu, and you will see the server videos where you can buy those. And a lot of you have been purchasing the DVDs, and thank you so much for doing that and supporting the shows. I really do appreciate it. So once again, if you want to learn Windows Server 2008 R2 or Windows Server 2012 or VMware ESXi, if you're not virtualizing your servers, how come? You can save so much electricity, so much time, and so many resources by virtualizing. And maybe I'll do one show one night and talk about virtualization because I believe in it. So I have such positive results with it, and I believe in it because it helps to better utilize your resources. But folks, you're going to learn all this from install to administration. Once again, you can sign up for those at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Click the pull-down menu at the top of the screen for the online classes and go in there and actually sign up for those. Remember, they're self-paced. I do get a lot of emails that says, Jack, when does your courses start? They start right now. Sign up and you can start right this minute. As soon as you click on the purchase, you go through the PayPal thing, boom, you're on the course and you're ready to go. So don't wait until in the morning when I wake up at 5:30 here on the East Coast. Do it now. If you're sitting at home at midnight, you're like, I want to start a course. Now's a great time to do so. Once again, you can sign up for those at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Folks, don't forget about the new podcast I'm working on. We'll see how it goes. Tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we will be broadcasting on Spreaker. So you will find me on Spreaker. And it is called The Tech Podcast. So thetechpodcast.com. Spell that out, thetechpodcast.com. And already before the show tonight, I was approved on iTunes for it. So I put the iTunes subscription link in there. If you click on it, you can subscribe to that podcast and start downloading that one also. So folks, I hope you have a great work week. I hope your servers keep humming along, and I hope your network keep running along. Hope your firewalls are safe and keeping you sound asleep at night like mine do. And not keep us awake worrying about who might be breaking into our networks. Also, I hope all your computers run smoothly. And if you have these Windows XP boxes, you know, just watch over them a little bit more closely. I mean, I know a lot of you out there are going to have them, and that's just part of the business. I mean, and we'll get there eventually. When XP came out, I know so many people still was running Windows 98. It just would blow you away. And Windows 2000, a lot of us ran that for quite a while. So bear with it. Upgrade them as soon as you can. If you do upgrade them, I would suggest whatever you're upgrading, add at least 8 gigs of RAM to it. That would be my oversight and my professional opinion for you. So if you're running 4, and we're planning, a lot of ours have 4, we're just going to throw 8 more gigs in there. If nothing else, have a total of at least 8 gigs for Windows 7. And that's a good starting point anyway. More is always better, but we know sometimes that's not a possibility with the cost. So, you know, be that what it may be. And if your computers won't take the extra RAM, then, you know, have your boss or have your CEO listen to one of these podcasts and listen to the end of this show. Mr. CEO, Mr. Owner of the business, for the love of your business and knowing that your technology runs your business, if you didn't have your computers, you probably wouldn't have a business today. Upgrade your Windows XP boxes. Allow your tech guys to go out and purchase yourself, if you need to, purchase new Windows 7 computers and get more up to the 21st century and get rid of that stuff because you may have some troubles later on, and don't blame the tech guys. All right, everybody, thank you so much for listening to Tips from the Server Room. Once again, I'm your host, Jack, and I appreciate you being here. And please get those questions in. It helps these shows so much to have a two-way conversation with you. And I'll be talking to you next week on Tips from the Server Room. Bye for now. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.